This is a replay of the Thursday night, September 28th WGN show. We started at 11 right after hockey. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from One VoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's One VoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We got 2 hours to spend together tonight. If it's on your mind, it will be on mine. And a few weeks ago, we were talking about D.B. Cooper, Dan Cooper. He's the mystery. He's the guy who hijacked an airplane. It was going from Portland to Seattle. And he winds up getting $200,000 and all this. And they're taking off for Mexico City. And he does the unthinkable. He parachutes out of the plane over the Pacific Northwest. He's never been seen again. And some of the money, very little of the money, has shown up, but not him. And so there's been, as we talked about, there's been over 50 years coming up. On 52 years this November, people have wondered. Well, turns out the FBI closed the case in 2016 on Dan Cooper or D.B. Cooper. The ticket, by the way, said Dan Cooper, which is actually the name of a comic character in France. But a journalist got it wrong and called him D.B. Cooper, and the name stuck ever since then. But regardless, whatever you want to call him, he undoubtedly wasn't Dan Cooper or D.B. Cooper. But whoever he is, not a clue. Well, there is an individual who, Eric Ullis. Eric was 5 years old when Dan made his jump and has been fascinated ever since. And so he's suing the FBI. I kid you not. The guy's now in his 50s, and he says he spent countless hours scouring thousands of FBI documents for any details that the agents might have missed. And, you know, I will admit it does have that James Bond-esque element to it. And, of course, the fact that he's never been found. And as Eric points out, you know, this is not a Bigfoot legend. This is somebody who was real. No one was physically harmed in this event, except maybe DB. Who knows? The crew had some stress and all that, but everybody was fine. So to speak. And so this guy, Eric, has determined that he's going to find out what happened. In fact, he keeps a notebook next to his bed, so just in case inspiration strikes him while he's asleep, he can write it down. I kid you not. Meantime, he's pursuing a lead, and this is why he's suing the FBI. And that is, apparently, left behind on the plane was Cooper's clip-on necktie. And he believes that this could possibly help him figure out who Cooper was. Exactly how, I don't know. But nonetheless, he wants the necktie. He's suing the FBI. What do you want to bet the FBI doesn't have the necktie anymore? I mean, if they closed the case in 2016, heaven only knows. But it does, to this day, cause people to wonder, you know, who he was. Did he survive? And all that kind of stuff. Like we say, he obviously wasn't named after a French-Canadian comic book hero. So who was Dan Cooper? But the name lives on in infamy, to say the least. But who is he? Well, I don't know. It's funny that we talked about it just weeks ago, bringing up this case again, and here. we have someone who's serious enough to file suit. Now, apparently Netflix did a documentary, D.B. Cooper, Where Are You? That was just last year. And the History Channel, of course, interrupts their wall-to-wall Nazi presentation to bring you the hunt for evidence about Cooper and the undoing of D.B. Cooper. Well, we don't know if he's been undone or not. We have absolutely no idea. The problem is now, going on 52 years later, he undoubtedly is dead. I shouldn't say that because theoretically he could be very old and alive, but more than likely he's not. So this guy says they didn't even find the parachute. Now the parachute has to be somewhere, and I guess it's nice to have a hobby or a mission, as it were. And this Eric, he had a career before he decided that his life mission was finding out the truth about Dan Cooper. He was a professional blackjack player. And I guess did all right with it because he doesn't work anymore. It's a skill, he said, helps him focus on facts and avoid conspiracy theories. What is he kidding me? This is a conspiracy theory. But nonetheless, he said blackjack played a big part of how I think. And you're focused in a world strictly on math. You try to remove emotion as much as possible. But clearly it's emotional to have this type of an eccentric hobby, to say the least. And his phrase says he tries to spare his friends, not bombard them with minutia. And he saves that for like-minded people. You'll love this. At CooperCon events. I got to find those. And he says, Cooper's cigarette butts were initially recovered, but later disappeared. Yeah, recovered from where and where they disappear from. And so apparently the clip-on necktie we know came from JCPenney. Exactly how we know that, I'm not sure, but apparently we are. So he left it behind on the flight. But the tie and, of course, the ransom money are key pieces of the physical evidence. And the FBI tested the tie for traces of DNA. But Eric says, no, the tie knot has a metal spindle that may still have undiscovered DNA. It's hard to say. Well, again, if whoever Dan Cooper was is still alive, the likelihood that his DNA is in a database is probably nil. But anyway, he's suing for the tie, which he believes is stored in FBI headquarters. Yeah, what do you want to bet they're going to tell him? Not there. FBI has not responded so far to his lawsuit or to CNN, who requested comments and all that. And however, a former FBI agent said he didn't believe the FBI took the spindle apart on the tie to process it. And he said, but whatever it is, probably long compromised. So there you have it. And yeah, CooperCon. Yeah, hey, it might be a travel destination for you. I'll try and find out. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. And I'm hoping that we will hear from Bruce and Elwood tonight and find out whether he had to have surgery this morning and how it went. Of course, if he did, he may be in absolutely no condition to talk, and I more than understand that, but we are still keeping Bruce and Elwood in our prayers. Hopefully all is working out better than anybody could expect. So, 888-876-5593. And we got Leah in Marcus Hook. All right, Leah, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. How are you?
I can't complain.
Okay.
We'll just go with that.
Okay. I have a lot of things to discuss with you. First of all, I went to the weight loss doctor again, and I'm up to 52 pounds lost.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, are you still doing the Ozempic?
Ozempic and Wegovy, yeah.
Yeah, and you're no longer on the three times a day plan.
Oh no, God! Okay. I eat once a day.
All right.
I'm doing salads now. I can eat salads again. It's like it's counteracting my diverticulitis. It's like all the things I couldn't eat before, I can eat now.
Well, congratulations. This is all good news.
It's very good news. It's wonderful. Yeah. And we went and got our COVID, our Omicron shots for COVID Omicron.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, see, when I went to the weight loss doctor, he gave me a B12 shot, and I was all up and feeling good. And then we went and got our COVID shots, and we went, ugh, it just wiped us out. It just made us feel like we just wanted to cut. We just came home and slept. We slept all day today.
Well, how are you feeling now?
Well, I feel fine now. Okay. I think Albert's still really tired, and our throats were scratchy.
All right.
But our arms didn't hurt too much. Mm-hmm. But our throats were scratchy, and we were just tired. But I think I recovered a little better because I had the B12 shot in me.
I have no idea. Cannot comment. Will not comment. Let's move on.
Okay. We had some looting here in Philadelphia the past two nights.
What happened?
They're getting ready for a third night of it.
What's precipitating it?
Well, they don't know. They think it might be because of the police officer who the charges were dropped. He was acquitted. Well, he was never taken to trial. He was accused of murdering this kid Eddie Irizarry, who was like 24 years old, I believe, and he was sitting in his car and he had a knife, but his partner, the police officer's partner, yelled "gun."
No, I'm
and
not.
So
yeah, I'm
he
aware
just started case. Shooting, and he shot him in the car.
Yes. Yes.
And it was on body camera, and they charged him with murder. The DA charged him with murder, but the judge threw it out and said there wasn't sufficient evidence for premeditated murder.
Yeah, and yeah. I remember this. Mark Dial was the police officer.
Mark Dial, yes.
And
so the judge threw it out and said there wasn't evidence for premeditated murder because he reacted to what his partner yelled "gun" and just started shooting.
Well, here's the deal. It's one thing to say and that may be very valid, by the way, but does that mean there are no charges at all? You know, and I guess what I'm saying is, for many people, that's that's sadly an unacceptable conclusion, and that explains
that's
for sure. And, you know, that may be unacceptable, too. I hate to think that, something like that would kick off this type of looting. But, B, I'd also hate to think that somebody decided they were refiling because of it. The whole thing sounds like a mess to me. Welcome to Philadelphia.
Yeah, welcome to Philadelphia. Exactly. Well, they had a protest, a peaceful protest, 2 days ago. And then when it happened, and then there was looting. And then the police came out and said the looting had nothing to do with the protest. And then now there was a second day of looting, and now they're saying it might have something to do with the protest. And now they're expecting a third day of looting. So I don't know. Nobody really knows. And they said it was this woman who got people on social media to come and start looting. And I forget her name. It was a weird name, like Cookie or Meatball or something. I don't even know.
All right, something edible. I see. Yeah. Cookie or Meatball. Now there's two choices, but Cookie or Meatball. All right. Well, very good. Very good.
Remember.
All right, I'll try to look that up too.
And she was saying, "I'm traumatized by this," and after being in jail or something, and I was like, "What? What are you even talking about?"
I'm traumatized by her name, but I want to find out exactly who this is. I just looked this up, and there's no cookies or meatballs. They say it's Dagia Blackwell.
Okay.
There's no food. There's no food involved in that anywhere, Leah. You've been on this diet too long. Dagia Blackwell, 21, used a social media platform to encourage people to loot at several locations and is alleged to have engaged in the criminal activities herself, according to the district attorney. So
there was a woman they interviewed named Cookie or Meatball and saying she was traumatized. Maybe it was one of the store owners. I don't know.
I think it's been the diet. I'd watch that. All right.
So that's going on in Philadelphia. And then I already asked John and he gave me the answer. So I don't know. I was confused about why they're saying Trump is in trouble for saying that he had more income than he did. because I was thinking it was a tax thing, and I was thinking, but he would pay more taxes.
No,
why would he be in trouble?
It's not taxes. And you know, again, things that turn political are just horrible. But here's the deal: if anybody, I don't care if it's Donald Trump or it's you, if anybody lies in order to obtain funding, that's fraud. And
in funding, that's what John said, because he could obtain loans because of that.
Well,
yeah, I wasn't thinking that.
Funding of all sorts. It doesn't have to be necessarily loans. It can be investments as well. It doesn't have to be debentures. It can be equity. But either way, it is absolutely illegal to misstate income. But again, how this is coming up, you know, that's for another show, but... Oh, please.
Oh yeah, no. But I was just thinking, if anybody lied about their income, they would say it would be lower than they pay less taxes.
No, it's not. It's not about taxes. It's about misstating for for investment or loan purposes. And yes, it's illegal. And of course, people have been doing it. I mean, hell, you look at why housing fell apart with the liar's loans back in the day that you didn't have to prove. It's unfortunately very commonplace.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both for cluing me in on that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, since you brought it up, I want to explain something because I've known people who've gotten in trouble for this before. A lot of people will decide they're applying for a credit card and they'll go ahead and state that they make gazillion dollars or whatever. And next thing you know, they say, gee, it's great. I got approved. I have a credit card. Yeah, most likely you will be, assuming you don't have a bad credit score. But here's the deal. The credit card company keeps that application on file. And at some point, if you default, you just stop paying. They can get you for fraud if you misstated your income. And I actually knew somebody, a radio guy. He's no longer alive, but I won't mention his name anyway. But he had done that. He had gotten a bunch of credit cards, and he went to town for about 2 years, and then he filed bankruptcy on a lot of money. And what came up, American Express, who very often are the leaders in uncovering this stuff, discovered that what he stated on his application had nothing to do with reality, and there were criminal charges.
Wow.
Plus, nothing was canceled in the bankruptcy.
Now, see, I would never think to do that.
Well,
that would never occur to me
but,
to do that.
You know, a number of people do things like that. Like, I've known people who say, oh, I got cheaper insurance rates because I'm not using my address. I'm using an address in a cheaper area, and I'm not paying as much for car insurance. Well, there again, the car insurer will take your money. And if you just have a fender bender or whatever, probably nothing's going to happen. But let's say, unfortunately, you hit the busload full of school children and nuns. All right. Now, at this point where there's a big payout, the insurance company is going to do a little investigation. And if they find out that you did not live at the address for which you had applied the insurance, they don't have to pay a dime.
Well, the only thing I've ever done like that is back in the days of Columbia House.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Columbia
House? Well, yeah. You're Terre Haute, Indiana. You're talking about getting five CDs, 25 CDs for a dollar, and then all that stuff.
Well,
yes.
Well, I started it when they had LPs.
Yes.
Back in the 70s.
Yes.
And I would get memberships in like all these different names, but they knew it was the same address.
Well, and I don't think they were terribly concerned. What they were hoping was that after you got your free albums, they would be mailing you the one a month, and if you didn't tell them in advance you didn't want it, you had to pay for it. So they were hoping you
would.
Yes. No,
I started with albums, and then I went to cassettes, and then I went to CDs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I wouldn't be too worried with the fact finders in Terre Haute either. All right. All right, Leah, always a pleasure. That's for sure. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Okay, bye. Wow, all right. My head is just spinning. All right, we're going to talk about Houston Radio with Johnny, and we got stories with James and Will in Georgia wants to comment on D.B. Cooper. Or I'm going to look up the Cooper Cons right about now on WGN Radio.
When your baby leaves you all alone, and nobody calls you on the phone, don't you feel like a crime? Don't you feel like a crime? For here I am, honey, come on,
Academy. When you're all alone in your lonely room, and there's nothing but the smell of her perfume, don't you feel like a crying? Don't you feel like a cry? Come on, come on, cry to me. Oh, nothing can be said.
And radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, it was Dave in Chicago who said, will you play Cry to Me by Solomon Burke? Absolutely I will. Recorded in 1961, released on Atlantic in 1962. Burt Burns wrote that under his pseudonym Burt Russell, and Claus Ogerman was the arranger on that and conductor, and just a fine record all the way around. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we'll get to Houston Radio in a moment, but I wanted to mention I did look up CooperCon. That's right, it's coming up, and that would be November 17th in Seattle this year. And they tell me at the website there's a major new update and reveal at CooperCon 23. No details released in advance. Now, next year they're doing Seattle, Dallas, and Boston locations. But this year, that would be November the 17th through the 19th, 10 to 4 each day for CooperCon. And they've got a full schedule on board, parachuting from an airliner and the copycats. There are copycats? Flight path, landing zone, hiding in plain sight. The tie analysis, they'll be discussing that and the DNA lawsuit that I mentioned. And ask the experts. I don't know who's an expert in this, but all right. And they also have other skyjackers apparently allegedly in evidence. Obviously, none of them caught. All right, so you can check all that out at CooperCon. Now, with that in mind, Will is in Georgia. Maybe he's going. I don't know. So, Will, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you, Raleigh. You remember me from D. Clark, and we're both a fan of his.
Yes.
Hey, Little Girl in the High School Sweater.
Yes, yes. Best backbeat ever, you betcha.
You're coming in quite strong tonight.
Good.
70 miles south of Atlanta. So
right.
I'm listening in, and that was a 727, of course. And was that Northwest Airlines or Continental?
I don't think it was either of them. It might have been Northwest, because I know there's a Northwest flight attendant who's in that, but that's a good question. Maybe it was. That's a great question. What was that airline? It was not Continental, but let's have a look. Yeah. Why wouldn't I know that off the top of my head? I would assume it's Northwest, but let's fight. Let's see what he did. Here we go. Northwest. Yeah, Northwest Airline.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm surprised that the vaunted FBI closed its case, what, in 2015 or so?
Yeah, 2016, yes.
2016. Our beloved Everett Dirksen of Illinois, you know, he would have said, well, you know, a couple of hundred thousand here and a couple hundred thousand there, and pretty soon you're talking big money.
Right. Well, especially for Northwest Orient, yes.
And that's a chump change nowadays. Well, with with the debt that they have and the payments that they're making out.
It's chum change, period. I'll tell you what. I went through the drive-thru to get John a hamburger at Burger King. He didn't even get a Coke, and it was $9.02. So, please. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm surprised the FBI didn't do more research DNA, because our friend Mr. Cooper, he left behind some cigarettes that he smoked. And he had a couple of cocktails from the flight attendant before he made his jump.
Right. The cigarette butts had been discovered at some point. But remember, in 1971, they weren't doing DNA evidence. So they weren't
right.
Going to collect it for that. But the cigarette butts were in evidence for a while, and then they sort of mysteriously disappeared. I don't know what happened with that.
Uh-huh.
But you know it's 1971 because a one-way ticket from Portland to Seattle was $20.
Right, right. So, oh, I must tell you, for you and all the listeners, there's a great little story. It only is 10, 11 pages in a mystery book from, who was that? Who was that man, portly man who showed up in his own movies?
You talking about Alfred Hitchcock?
Alfred Hitchcock, yes.
Oh, man. There's a description.
30 mystery stories.
Okay.
And this is entitled, very simply, Hijack.
Ah.
Hijack by Robert Fish.
Okay.
And it is a twist. It is a funny twist to any hijacking that's ever been followed.
Yeah, you
and
know,
you, I know you'll want to follow up on it.
Well, no, I'm aware of it, actually. That was a short story. It was in Playboy.
Right, exactly. 1972.
Yep.
Yeah, a year later.
Yep.
And it's available on the internet, I believe.
Oh, it's on YouTube,
on
I'm
the
sure.
Computer.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Yeah. You can actually hear it. But yes, absolutely.
Right.
Robert L. Fish. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, could you tell me about WMBW, World's Most Beautiful Drive in Peoria? Those were the call letters that a president gave to that radio station. Were you aware of that?
Well, I didn't know.
Peoria?
I didn't know a president gave them, but yeah.
Uh-huh. WMBW, World's Most Beautiful Drive.
It's MBD, WMBD, and there's still a television station. Channel 31 is WMBD.
Uh-huh.
In Peoria, World's Most Beautiful Drive. Yes.
Television or radio?
Yeah,
or both?
It's Channel 31 as far as
TV.
That goes. Yeah, but there's radio as well, AM for sure, and I don't know if it was 1470. I'm not sure if that is still MBD. It might be. I know that they put an FM on at one point. It's probably still on 100.3, I think, but yeah, 1470, and it's MBD.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was interesting because I didn't know that a president did it, but when it signed on the air, that was before the Federal Communications Commission. Of course, it was also not on 1470 either, but at the time, this was like 1927, so the Federal Radio Commission before the FCC, and they, you know, like most of those stations, they were a split frequency. And so,
right.
You know, given the years, I assume you're talking Teddy Roosevelt, but...
I believe so. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so, you know, they went on before the Federal Radio Commission, the FRC, started assigning frequencies. So they picked their own at first. And I don't remember what it was. I think it was like 1075 kilohertz or something like that, you know. So, yeah. And then it moved around. It shared frequencies with TAD and, you know, all that. And but anyway, yeah, they're still there, I'm pretty sure. And I bet you the call letters still stand as well in the TV station. A company I worked for, actually, Midwest Television. I worked for them in San Diego. They had owned them. And they own KFMB in San Diego and a bunch of stuff. And I think MBD is owned by WGN's parent company now, Nexstar, I think.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
But I'm no TV expert, God knows.
Right. Well, radio is it.
Yeah,
you bet. As far as I'm concerned.
I'm with you. All right, thanks.
Well,
appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Raleigh.
Likewise.
Take care.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
So, that whole Midwest Television thing, that's quite the saga, too. But anyway, I'll bet you that AM's still right there at 1470, probably doing talk or something. I don't know. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. And what do we have? We're going to have Johnny in Austin. We got James on the south side. We got you. We got Vern's request coming up. Vern had a request. I'll explain in moments on WGN Radio.
Hey.
Well, there's the lovely Celery Stalks at Midnight. It was Verna called and said, I want to hear Celery Stalks along the highway. Well, now it's Celery Stalks at Midnight, and that's the Ray McKinley Orchestra, and that is actually a remake. Ray did it originally in 1940, and that was when he was with Will Bradley. I was on 78. I could play you that version, too. But in 55, Dot in Gallatin put out a 45 version of that of Ray McKinley and his orchestra Ultra High Fidelity. Well, you got to call it something. So Celery Stalks at Midnight on Dot. So I'm doing that for Vern, who is in Arkansas. All right. So 888-876-5593. Johnny in Austin, what's up?
Hey, that was a great song. You know, I heard Vern request that the other night, and I actually went and looked up Ray McKinley to see if it was charted, and I couldn't find it as a charted song, and I kept thinking, well, it sounds like that song might be pretty good, and you just proved that it was.
Yeah, that's the 1955 version. I can play you some of the 1940 version, too, Will Bradley. These were big band songs. Ray McKinley was actually a drummer, but he was also a vocalist on a lot of this stuff. But, yeah, the original of 40, the original was a 78, like I say, 1940 on Columbia. So I don't know which version Vern wanted, and there is somewhere in there a vocal, believe it or not. But,
well, you know, back in those days.
Yeah.
Back in those days, the vocals didn't start for a long time.
Oh, exactly. That's so true. But, you know, 22 seconds before the song ends, somebody chirps up. Yes, exactly.
Now, are you a big band fan yourself?
Some of it, absolutely. You know, like anything else, I won't say all of it, but some of it, you betcha.
I got a ton of that stuff, and I really I don't love it all, but
right.
I got a Ted Weems CD the other day that goes back to, I guess, the 40s or 50s, or even before that, and I got a Buddy Clark and a Hal Kemp.
Yeah.
I guess if you love music, you can find a little good everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Buddy Clark, and everybody thinks about him for Linda, as well they should, but my favorite was Dreamer's Holiday.
I just got that in the mail yesterday, and it's probably on there. I think it's called 16 Most Requested Songs. It's on Columbia.
It almost has to be on there. Yeah, it'll say A Dreamer's Holiday.
I'll write it down, but it's either there or it's not. But, when I get in the mood for something, I just like to hear a steady part of that music. I don't want it mixed up with something else. I mean, if I want to hear big bands, I want to hear them together.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, of course, Buddy Clark really, and he was popular in the big band era, but his real claim to fame were those little pop standard records, you know, that period that is dying forever.
Yeah, you're talking about the what was it, Linda?
Yeah, Linda was Buddy Clark, yeah, and that was a big. He talks at the beginning of it too, and I love that because, you know, a New York accent today sounds so much different than a New York accent did in the 40s. And
never thought about that.
Oh my God! And you can see it in movies and things like that. The Buddy Clark, Linda, and I'll play you the opening of that. You'll see exactly what I mean.
Who was that little girl or young
Yeah,
lady
exactly. Here you go.
Cutie, what's your name?
Fresh. I don't talk to strangers.
Oh, I'm no stranger. Been waiting every evening for you to walk by.
Keep waiting. I'm still walking.
Oh, what's your name?
None of your business.
Pretty name. But I'll just call you Linda.
Well, how did you guess?
Yeah, so the girl is Anita Gordon. And, of course, it's Buddy Clark who's the guy. And it was Ray Noble's orchestra.
Didn't he do that South America Take Me Away? Babaloo, babaloo.
So did everybody. Hang on a minute. Don't go away, John. Oh, wait a minute. I still have 30 seconds there. John came in to say, shut up. But no, I know. I've actually got another 30
seconds. He's probably talking to me.
No, he's definitely. Yeah, right. Babaloo would have done it, right? No, absolutely not. All right. Well, don't stay right where you are. Because we've got another hour of this. We've got James's stories as well, but I think Johnny and I are going to talk a little about Houston radio. And, of course, Pop Standards, you betcha, we'll play some. In fact, maybe Dreamer's Holiday, maybe the Buddy Clark record coming up, and a little more about Buddy, who, of course, wasn't Buddy Clark. But I'll tell you that whole history as well coming up on WGN Radio.
Aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please. In the land where dollar bills are falling off the trees, on a dreamer's holiday. Every day for breakfast there's a dish of scrambled stars, and for luncheon you'll be munching rainbow candy bars. You'll be living on a mode on Jupiter or Mars, on a dreamer's holiday. Make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth. You will feel terrific when you get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and Perry Como had the bigger hit, but that was my favorite version, and it actually didn't hit the charts until a month after he was killed. It was a plane crash. He was coming home from Stanford, a football game that some friends had been in. They were flying. The pilot ran out of fuel and crashed on Beverly Boulevard. So anyway, back to Johnny. So yes, I loved Buddy Clark. I thought he was terrific.
Well, I got the CD in my hand right now, and that song is definitely on here.
Oh yeah, well, it was bigger for Perry Como, but I just thought his version was the version as far as that goes. And he was born in Boston. His name was Samuel Goldberg, and died in L.A. But that day that he died, right before they had flown up for that Stanford football game, he had been subbing for Dick Hames as host on Club 15, which was a CBS radio show, and his guests were the Andrews sisters. So it was kind of a high point for him, and, after that, of course, that was it.
Did you say how old he was when he died?
Oh, he was young. He was like 37 years old.
Yeah, some of these big band folks died young, and one I don't remember which one it was now died in a automobile accident at like 35.
No, and there's a lot of plane crashes also, and of course Linda, which was probably his biggest record. That was interesting because Jack Lawrence wrote it, and Jack Lawrence's lawyer was Lee Eastman, and Lee Eastman had a baby girl, Linda, who of course became Linda McCartney, and he said, write a song for my daughter, and so Linda is for Linda Eastman.
Really?
Yeah.
There is a song on here that I think Xavier Cugat did called South America Take Me Away.
Yeah.
It must be Buddy Clark's vocal on there.
Yeah, Cugat is, and that's fairly well known for him. That was, I think, in the 30s. And it was Cugat's orchestra, but Buddy's vocal. But Buddy had, of course, been a big band singer. He Benny Goodman, of course, but, you know, he had a couple other things before that just weren't popular. But he signed as a solo act in 1946 on Columbia. And then, of course, Linda hit the following year, and that was it. And How Are Things in Glockamora and all that kind of stuff. Peggle My Heart.
That wasn't one of my favorites.
Right, no, I know. Or Peggle My Heart, yeah, you know.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you want to switch formats real quick? You want to switch to a new format?
Yes. What's up?
I got my Jimmy Ruffin CD of his greatest Motown hits with the great song Everybody Needs a Love on it.
Yes, a wonderful CD.
Got that in my hand. Yes, I did. I got a good copy of it. It's used, but it's brand new, not a scratch on it.
Well, yeah, especially with CDs, it doesn't matter if they're used. About the worst that ever happens is, you know, the covers are crappy, but the CDs themselves, you've really got to go far to destroy them. The only problem I have with CDs is usually on some of the more obscure labels is CD rot, and I hate when that happens.
Oh, what? Yeah, I have been told before, and I've had that happen occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've been told if you ever burn your own CD, don't ever put one of those paper peel-off stickers on it or eat right through it.
Well, you know, that that won't help disc rot, that's for sure. But the real thing is the whole oxidation of the reflective layer. And, you know, it's really what are you starting with on a CD? And because it's protecting the outer layer, that lacquer that gets eaten away, that means the last cuts of the CDs are the ones that are going to, you know, suffer, because obviously that you know, the end of the CD,
the ones that are on the outside.
Yes.
Yeah, but they start from inside.
Yes,
out.
they do. And so yeah, and I've been surprised, even some major labels, but for the most part it's not like God, I had two CDs. I had everything that Barbara Mason ever recorded, and boy, that went to CD rot big time. So
is there a rhyme or reason why some do and some do not?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Part of it's the media, and then part of it's the processing. But you know, if you're doing CDR or RW, you got problems. The reflective layer is a little more complex than an aluminum layer, but man, it can go quicker. And it's you know, for the most part, the very major labels, you don't see it happening. And, you know, the same thing can happen with laser discs, things like that. You know, you can get that kind of rot.
Yeah, well, you see, you never know until you really put it out there what's going to stand the test of time, and vinyl did, and the same thing with audio tape. Remember the the good old tape from back in the 60s and so forth? You'll have better luck with that than some of that back-treated Ampex 406 and 456 Grandmaster stuff they put out in the 70s and 80s that did not stand the test of time.
Right. And, of course, the other thing with reel-to-reel especially is how are you storing it? You know, people who are keeping it in their not climate-controlled controlled garage for 20 years, well, you know, good luck. But Blu-rays recognize the problem, and that's why they use silver alloy rather than aluminum alloy. And it has not been the same problem on Blu-rays, from what I understand.
To save some of this Ampex back-treated tape, there is a recipe, and I'm not kidding you, to revive it for one pass-through to copy it off. You actually bake it.
Yes.
You can't do it in a conventional oven. I baked mine in a car in the summer at 140-some-odd degrees. There's a process to do
it. Right.
And it works. Yeah.
Yeah, most of the time.
Enough,
you know, I'll just say that. You know, most of the time.
So enough tech talk. I wanted to mention to you that, you know, how many radio stations you say you work for? You mentioned
it
the
probably other night. Over 50. Yeah.
Well, just I can't remember how many I work for. Some I work for many times, and I work for the good, the bad, the ugly.
You well, see, you were on the air at all of them. I wasn't. Remember, they didn't let women on the air at first. So, you know, I might be doing traffic, or I might be doing production, or whatever, you know. So a lot of those jobs were certainly not airworthy.
Well, you know, when I was program director at KRBE in 1969, I was the PD there in 68 and 69, it was a kind of a top 40 hybrid format that I came up with, but I was quite young. FM was very young, but I had a lady come in to apply for a job from Charleston, West Virginia, and she had a resume that was just amazing, and she had pictures with all these famous artists and everything, and she was her air name was Lovable Sam. And she was in town visiting friends and stuff, and she came up with this impressive resume, and heck, it was hard to get people to work there. So we didn't pay much,
Well, of course.
and so I hired Lovable Sam to work the all-night shift.
Yeah.
And that's actually what she wanted, and I put her in there, and she happened to love soul music, and as I said, she was a friend of James Brown's and a lot of artists. And I said, her real name was Amy. I said, Amy, you just get in there and do what the hell you want. Anything, whatever you want to do. And she'd get on there some night. I mean, she knew her limits. But one night she got on to play and Prove It by Aretha Franklin and probably played it about four times in a row. And I said, you go, Amy. You do what makes you happy. And the listeners loved her. But, no, back in those days, there were not a lot of ladies on the radio.
Let me ask you, what happened to her? I'm really curious about this.
Well, it's funny. We all... The paychecks weren't regular. It was owned by a gentleman out of New Orleans, Louisiana, by the name of Dave Wagenvoort. I'm sure you heard that name before?
Yes.
The barter man.
Yes.
He believed in barter. And at any rate, the paychecks were not consistently going through.
Uh-huh.
So I had a staff of, and it was really funny because I was the PD and the youngest one on the staff. I think the next oldest one was like 32 uh-huh. years old. But we had a great family of folks there. So at any rate, if you got to take a break, let me know.
Yeah, I will hear. Yeah, thank you for that. But I will hear in a few minutes. But yeah, Dave Wagenvoort, he spent a lot of time at Tampa and a number of other places as well. Downtown Dave.
When Dave would come to town, it was quite an event. I'll never forget one night I was on the air and he was in town with his group, and I was playing Twisting with Linda by the Isley Brothers, and he got up there. We had a glass window there, and people could watch the DJs. They drove by, and he was in there dancing on the ceiling to Twisting with Linda by the Isley Brothers.
But I'm still curious what happened to Amy. You know, because you're talking about somebody who sounds like she'd be a great talent. Did you go back to West Virginia? Where was she on the air? What happened?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what happened. She did a great job there. The day came in the summer of 69. We had a great staff, but the paychecks were bouncing.
Right.
And the staff came to me and said, you know, we love it here, but we can't eat on no money.
Yeah, no cash, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it put me in a position to say, well, you know, I'm going to stand up for everybody. For whatever reason, my checks were going through. I don't know why, but they did. And so we had a meeting called this is terrible. Boy, you couldn't get away with this today without it being big news. But and I'll get to Amy in just a second. But what happened was, we called a meeting with the management on one Friday morning, I think it was, at 7 a.m. in the control room, had everything printed up with our grievances about no pay and this and that and the other, and they basically said, we don't care what you think. We hit the sign-off card about 7:30 in the morning and all left.
All right, hang on a minute. That's dead air for you. Don't go away. Yeah, we'll talk a little about Dave Wagenvoort too. You know, he was the barter king. His final act, he bartered his own funeral. But all right, so we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
Darling, may I have the pleasure of having this next twist with you? You don't know how to twist? Well, let me tell you.
Doctors agree, so I've been told, do the twist and you'll never.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. JT and Aurora wanted to hear Dear Lady Twist, why not? Gary U.S. Bond's 1962, La Grande Records, one of the labels that Frank Guida owned in Norfolk, along with SPQR and others, and Frank Guida wrote that, actually. So back to Johnny. See, so you're 7:30 in the morning, you've signed the damn station off. What happened then?
We had the sign-off card ready to push the button. Of course, we didn't want to, but the management was they didn't want to play ball with us, and we had to stick together, and we all sadly hit the sign-off cart and left the building. So the jocks would come over to my house for a couple of, I don't know, maybe a week every day, and we'd spend the day together reminiscing and talking and having fun. And these jocks, you know, some were local, some came from other places all over the country. I was probably about seven of us, I guess. And Amy, Lovable Sam, the all-night, very talented lady, went back to West Virginia, and she said, you know, you ought to come up and visit up there. You're not doing anything right now. You're not real happy. You don't have a job. Why don't you come up and visit? And I said, yeah, okay. So I went up to Charleston, West Virginia, and sat in with her at her radio station. She was working at a MOR station at the time, and she loved soul music like we do. I mean, mm-hmm. she would be right here listening to this radio show of yours. I mean, she just loved it. At any rate, so she was working at this MOR station. Well, they offered me a job. Well, I was 19 years old. I didn't have anything else to do, so I took it. Nobody listened to the radio station. It had no listeners. You've been on a few of those,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
And you know when you're working for a dog. You just know. And so I was doing the night shift, and fortunately I had a friend who worked for me. So that's where Amy ended up. She ended
and
up
then
right
what?
Back there.
And then what? Where is
and
she?
Then,
is she still with us?
Well, she's not with us anymore. Oh. She's been gone a long time.
Oh, man.
But she actually came back to Houston a couple of times to visit and almost got hired at KYOK, and I'd like to talk to you about KYOK before we're done. But any rate, I'm still trying to find some air checks of Lovable Sam / Amy Johns was her last name.
Wow. I'd love to hear them.
So would I, especially when she played Prove It by Aretha for about four times in a row. Love the song. And I said, you know, but it was so wonderful to just take a talent like that and say, get in there and just do what you want to do and have fun.
Yeah, well, you're the dream PD when that happens, of course. Well, so she's been gone a long time. What caused her demise?
I'm not sure, but she did have an attraction to abusive men, I'll tell you that.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
And you kind of see how that can go.
Yeah.
And sadly, she made a lot of poor choices in her life, but she was a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And she was one of the most talented radio people I've ever heard.
Wow.
And I was so blessed to have her come in there and apply for that job.
Wow. Well, if anybody has an air check of Lovable Sam, we want it. Yeah, I hope we.
Yeah,
hope
well, she was on. But what ended up happening was, I fortunately had some friends who worked over at the big 95 WKAZ, which was the dominant top 40 station in Charleston, West Virginia, and they offered me middays there, and I was out of that doghouse.
Right, exactly. You betcha. Don't let the door hit you on your way out. Absolutely.
But I did want to, and you got news coming up.
Yes, I do. And so, and then I want to hear about KYOK. Don't go away. I think Graham ran out of gas. Oh, my God. We were following Graham. He would be in Colorado tonight, so I want to hear about that, too. And we got Eduardo and Lauren Willowbrook on a bus. Well, all that and more. And, of course, James and his wonderful story. So attendance is taken, and news is next on WGN Radio.
Yeah.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, is the Flamingo on End. Nobody loves me like you. Sam Cooke wrote it. And it was Marianne in Chicago who said, play anything by the Flamingos. So there you are. That's anything. We're talking to Johnny in Austin. KYOK, huh? Tell me all.
That was, by the way, my favorite Flamingo song ever.
Really? All right. Well,
oh, yeah.
Sam Cooke wrote it. George Golden
produced
it.
Sam Cooke wrote it, and I don't think Sam Cooke ever recorded it, did he?
Not that I know of. You know, I say it
well,
like that
did,
because
yeah,
if he did, it would come out on some odd CD. As far as I'm concerned, it was never released on vinyl. But, yeah, I don't know.
You did mention Dave Wagonford, who owned KRBE. By the way, in 69, when I was program director there, I take great joy in being the first disc jockey in Houston to have played Oh Happy Day by the Edward Hawkins Singers.
Oh, well, and that's
the record. Yeah. The record promotion man named Al Mathias came to town. I think he was out of Dallas with a box of songs every week.
Yeah.
And said, I think there's something really unique about this song. We're going to play it. And another one that he brought with him was Coloring Father by the Winstons, which we put in, and Grazing in the Grass, the vocal by the Friends of Distinction.
All right.
All from the great summer of 1969.
Yeah.
But anyway, we wanted to talk about KYOK real quick, and I had a reason for this. As you know, that was my first job in 1965, Thanksgiving Day, my first day. And then a couple of years I was away from KYOK, but always wanted to go back. And in 68, they brought a program director in from New Orleans by the name of Rick Roberts.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember Rick?
Yep.
And, yeah, he was a great program director, and he came in, said in 1968, was transferred to KYOK in Houston. Houston was his home. And I was fortunate enough to be rehired at KYOK back in about December of 1971 by Rick Roberts.
All right.
And I'm very happy that Rick Roberts this year will be inducted into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. His wife, Mabel, is so excited. He's got a son by the name of Kevin who is so happy that his dad finally got inducted into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. And that all happens this, I think it's this November 4th. And Rick's Rick Roberts' birthday would have been November 3rd, I believe.
Okay.
He was born in 1941. Of course, Rick left us in about 2013.
Yeah. You know, Indiana University, in their African American Music Archives, has the entire Rick Roberts collection, 57 to 79.
Of photos.
60 photos and also an audio cassette.
Oh, that I did not know.
Yes.
I George Nelson also has, from KYOK, has his collection of photos there, too. And I don't know how all that happened, but goodness, I don't have that many pictures of Rick, but I bet his son Kevin does.
Well, and most of these pictures aren't of him. They're of the events, you know, like the We Love You concert.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, things like that, yeah.
Well, when and I should have asked his son Kevin this when we talked today, but when a university gets these pictures, what do they do with them?
It depends. They can do a number of things, but at IU they have an archive of African American culture and music, and they have a number of collections, and you know they're cataloged, and you know I do not think that they're online. Although I'm looking this up now to see. Wait a minute, they are online. You can see the not the audio necessarily, but you can see the you know the thumbnails of all the pictures. So
really,
that's neat. Yeah, so check that out. But the pictures themselves are residing at IU Bloomington.
Huh, that's really amazing. Well, I'm glad they are archived somewhere, but Rick was a fabulous program director. And you know this, too. As many radio stations as you work for, I think we always have a favorite memory of a radio station. And it was never necessarily the one where we made the most money.
Of course.
That's for sure.
Of course.
I mean, I've been in stations where I made a lot of money and been miserable.
Oh, absolutely. But no, of course. And different stations for different reasons. Well, it's just like when we talk about cities, favorite cities. They only exist in time. So, you know, that's true with radio stations as well. And we always say about radio, as you know, you got to win in the halls before you can win on the air. So it really does have to be a station that gels that way, that just makes the magic.
Well, I don't know if any of your listeners remember KYOK and the days of Rick Roberts. He was not only program director, but he was morning drive radio personality in Houston.
Sure.
From 1968 through about 1988, 89, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a great program director to me. He was a great friend, and we remained friends until he left this world. And I just wanted to say how happy that he was finally inducted into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame.
That is terrific.
This year.
Yeah, I am very pleased to hear that. And I know Houston Style Magazine, when he passed away, did a real nice deal on him. And I think those are online now, too. So, you know, it's there's a lot of news about him, but really neat that he is going to get that recognition. And I bet you on
some
level,
he was a great mentor to a lot of young people,
yeah,
too, that he helped get into this business. He was quite a good manager.
Yeah. All right. Well, terrific. I am so glad to hear from you. It is always wonderful, and hopefully we will.
It is. It is, and I know you got a little bit of time on your hands, and you got callers waiting, but thank you so much for your time, and if you get a chance, play me something good, like if you get a chance, play for me sometime Mighty High by the Mighty Clouds of Joy.
Oh, wow. Okay. We'll see what we can do.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
Good night. Good deal. So 888-876-5593. Graham is in Colorado, and running out of gas. Graham, what is going on?
Well, I got back to the gas station.
Thank God.
What happened, I'm going through Georgetown,
mm-hmm,
and I stopped and had dinner at a bar, had a beer, and decided, we got to go get gas. And I see all of a sudden the gasoline is over $4 a gallon. And I'm like, oh, the hell with these guys. I'll go to the next gas station. There was no next gas station.
Right.
I got up to the top of the mountain there where they were about to stop the traffic. They had the traffic stop for going through the one-lane tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, you know, I better turn around. And I made it back there according to the dashboard. I had 2 miles left.
I relate strongly to this, by the way, and of course, I've run out of gas in more places than I can tell you, but I remember when I got that driver's license at 16 and started driving the interstates. Of course, when you're on the East Coast, you know, you never have something like 102 miles between gas stations. Well, so I was leaving Las Vegas, and I was going to drive down to, actually, Phoenix, truth be known, and as I'm leaving Boulder City, the sign there says, last gas for 92 miles, and I was, nah, that's not right. Well, it was.
That can't be true.
Yeah, right. Just like there are parts of Utah, you know, next stop, 102 miles. Yes, they mean it. I know exactly how you feel. But I'm glad you made it back.
I'm now thinking to myself, I should have, before I started this trip, since I'm driving a pickup, I should have bought a gas can and put a gallon of gas in the back.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you do, in parts of that drive, you do have to time it so that you've got enough gas so that you won't run out. Yeah. So absolutely. And like I said, I learned the hard way. I didn't believe the sign.
No, I thought, I figured, oh, they're just taking advantage of us because they're the only gas station open after a certain time because it's a Circle K and the Exxon is closed.
Uh-huh.
But no, they're taking advantage of us because they're the last gas station before you go through the tunnel and start coming down the other side of this mountain.
Yes.
So I'm trying to remember what the name of the pass is, but it's where Route 6 crosses. And the funny thing is that I drive on Route 6 all the time up in New York.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's hilarious. So, well, so all's well that ended well, thank God.
Yeah, we got back. We put $75 or $77 worth of gas in, Uh-huh. And now I'm going to go back and get on the queue to go through the tunnel.
Right.
Now I'll probably get through the tunnel, and there'll be a gas station right there.
I don't know, actually, anymore.
I don't know either.
Of course.
The other thing, I found out last night that the first, 25 miles of Route 70 in Missouri is a toll road.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. And the lady told me that that was a toll road before they... Because you said there was a toll road that takes you down into...
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So what it is that was a toll road, she said, before 70 was even built. Because I told her, Raleigh James promised me that this...
Yes, that's right, exactly. Well, hell, I and there are, throughout Oklahoma, there's a few toll roads, but I did not think in Missouri.
No, Missouri.
I did not think you had the problem in Missouri.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. So sorry to lead you astray. And then on 70, I yelled at the lady anyway and gave her the $4.
But,
no, I didn't yell at her, but I gave the guy at the service plaza kind of a rash. And there was also a disabled veteran from a disabled Vietnam veteran who was all bent out of shape because he's driving his little RV that he refers to as his tiny house, and he has a service dog with him, and he couldn't get to the right fast enough to get the ticket. And because he travels and he lives in his little RV, he says, I'm never going to get the notice because I never go back to my mailing address.
Well, one way or another, it'll catch up with them.
Eventually, I told them you'd be better off if you pull in and explain the situation, and maybe they'll just let you pay whatever the top amount is, like they do on the New Jersey Turnpike. If you lose your ticket, if it blows out the window, whatever it is from the furthest point you are from that exit, they charge you. What I like to do is to get extra tickets. You sit there long enough and it spits out another ticket. Or if there's if there's an up ticket for a tractor trailer and you get out of the car and you grab that, or you reach down and grab a car ticket, it'll spit out an extra truck ticket.
Right.
And they're all the same ticket. So I liked it. We always like to play switch tickets. And that way we can save money on tolls.
Right. Well, it's harder to do now than it used to be as far as that goes. But I want to tell you one thing before you go, as far as this goes. When you're on I-70 and you're going west, you're going to be around mile marker 420 in Stratton, Colorado. There's an exit, I think, at 419. But anyway, at 420, if you look for that mile marker, it's not going to say 420. It's going to say mile 419.99. And you know why. Yeah, because 420
because
was...
they don't want the 420 thing.
That's right, because of the marijuana initiative thing. And the sign got stolen so many times that about five years ago, and you'll let me know if it's still there, but about 5 years ago, they replaced 420 with 419.99.
I believe that. I didn't notice it. I was out there, and I fell in love with that area.
Well, if you're on I-70, you'll be there again. That's for sure.
Well, no, I'm already way past that. I'm at mile marker 218.
Well,
but
wait. The mile markers go up in Colorado. The mile markers are going to go up, not down, the way you're going.
No, I'm going west.
The numbers go up.
No, they're going down.
They're going
down. That's the way the federal system works.
Oh, God.
From south to north, they go up, and from west to east, they go up.
Okay.
And that's why the Pennsylvania Turnpike was one of the last to go from exit 1
to exit 2.
No,
you're right. The U.S. highways are the polar opposite. All right. So, yeah, you're past that. All right, so...
Oh, yeah, but I jumped off over there and drove around in this little town. The first thing I saw was a big Cadillac on display, and it said it had liquor painted on the side. And I said, okay, this has got to be an interesting town. And then I darted for the exit because I saw a Cadillac, like the kind that you used to have.
A big old sedan DeVille, right,
or whatever.
A Fleetwood Brougham.
This wasn't even a Fleetwood Brougham. Yeah. This was a Fleetwood.
Okay.
And it had a big T welded to the top, and it was painted pink. And it was up on top of a pole. And I'm like, this has got to be the town for me. I pull off into town, and the first thing I see is one of these stainless steel diners. And the stainless steel diner, unfortunately, was closed. But I go into the gas station, and I go in to use the bathroom, and right by the gas, by the bathroom, there's the clearance shelf. And the first thing it had was a bunch of energy drinks and a six-pack of Bud Light. And it says, last one, on special. Okay. So I start driving around town, and all I see is people driving around in pickup trucks from the 60s, 70s, and early 80s.
Nice.
And you can tell they're being driven around because they're out on the street. They've got stuff in the back of them. And people are just driving these vehicles and loving them.
Oh, wow.
And on the way out of town, there was a sign up on the highway, free land.
Oh, jeez. That's great.
So I'm gonna call up and ask, what's the deal with the free land? Because even if I have to pay property taxes on it, if I could get road frontage for free,
right,
I'll take it.
Well, usually,
even if I have to pay taxes on it.
Usually it's not the taxes. Usually they want you to build something on the land. You know,
that could be.
Yeah, they're giving it away because they want people to, you know, build either dwellings or businesses or whatever. A lot of places I've seen that. So now you're by six, so like Loveland Pass. Is that about where you are?
Actually, I'm right by Loveland Pass.
Okay.
There was just the exit if you want to go on Old Loveland Pass instead of going through the tunnel.
Oh, all right, the scenic thing through Dillon and Frisco and all that. Yeah, okay.
I was thinking if it was daytime, I would have done that.
Nah.
But since it's dark.
All right, so how far are you going to get tonight?
I'm going to probably go about another 100 miles.
Okay.
Now, last night I pushed it just a little too far. And I was getting groggy by the time I pulled in and checked into a motel. And so I pushed it a little further than I should have.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brother's idea was, well, why don't you check in now? And, you know, since it was just starting to get dark. But it's amazing how much you can see in the dark.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's a full moon,
because
too.
It's a full moon, and it's clear.
Yeah.
And with all the lights from the vehicles.
By the way, I think, Graham, that you pretty much ended this show. I just looked at the time, and I thought, oh, my God, I think I'm out of it. So,
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Not your fault at all, and you've waited a long time, and I appreciate this. So I wish you the best of travels, and I want you to call me next week and tell me how it went.
I'll call you on Tuesday.
Sounds great.
I'm taking a red-eye home on Sunday. Good
Perfect.
Night.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All
bye.
Right. And I'm pretty sure that's the case. But if not, we'll talk to Laura. But otherwise, apologies to Laura and to James and to Eduardo. But like I say, looking at the clock, I think that I just ran out of time on WGN Radio.